everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's November 2023, and you're listening to episode 364, which is a conversation about the summer blockbuster movie Barbie. On this episode, I'm joined by Hilary Ferrer, who is the founder and CEO of Mama Bear Apologetics. Hilary is also the author and editor of two best-selling books, Empowering Your Kids to Challenge Cultural Lies and Mama Bear Apologetics' Guide to Sexuality. Hilary has written an online film review about the Barbie movie, and you can read her article for free at our website, equip.org. Hilary, it's been a while, but good to have you on the podcast again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I am really looking forward to this conversation because I happen to be a person who is a fan of the Barbie movie. I even wrote a little blog post about it. And if people have not been following the news, which I don't know how you can escape the Barbie movie, but this summer, the Barbie movie, people thought it was maybe a joke or something for kids. And since its debut, and now we're into the fall, it's been, I don't know, almost 12 weeks now, it has earned worldwide $1.5 billion.
That oh, wow.
Such a huge number. And this film is based on, yes, the Mattel line of dolls, Barbies, that have come in all different shapes and sizes and colors and had different friends and accessories in her Malibu beach house and things like that over the years. And this film is directed by a female director named Greta Gerwig. And Greta Gerwig, I remember her. I'm somebody who does watch a lot of films. And I remember her way back in the day when she was still an actress. But she is also now an acclaimed writer and director. I think one of her most recent directorial films has been Lady Bird with Saoirse Ronan in 2017, and of course the star-studded cast of her remake of Little Women by Louisa May Alcott that came in 2019. And so actually her husband is also an Oscar-nominated filmmaker. His name is Noah Baumbach, and she co-wrote this film with him. And this was also led by an all-star cast, including Margot Robbie in the lead role of Barbie. And as Ken, it was Ryan Gosling. So he has, I don't know if people know this, but way, way long time ago, he was like a child actor. Ryan Gosling appeared with Britney Spears and a lot of now famous people, Christina Aguilera, Justin Timberlake, all on the Mickey Mouse Club, where they sang and danced. And so I think people probably wondered, how hard was it for him to sing and dance in this? Probably not that hard, because more than 25 years ago, he was a child star. But anyway, that's the background. And the most interesting thing to me about Barbie, as far as its popularity worldwide, is that it is now available for streaming. So, you know, it's available for people to watch it, but people are still heading to the theaters to see it for the full experience, even though they can see it on the small screen. So I'm really excited to talk to Hilary about this movie. So I want to ask her specifically about her review, which I mentioned you can read for free at our website, equip.org. So Hilary, you start out the article with a quote from C.S. Lewis, and I'm going to read this quote for our listeners. It's this, quote, "Some people seem to think that I began by asking myself how I could say something about Christianity to children, then fixed on the fairy tale as an instrument, then drew up a list of basic Christian truths and hammered out allegories to embody them. This is all pure moonshine. I couldn't write in that way at all. Everything began with images, a fawn carrying an umbrella, a queen on a sledge, a magnificent lion. At first, there wasn't even anything Christian about them. That element pushed itself in of its own accord." So why did you choose that C.S. Lewis quote, probably not as well known as some of his others, to start your review?
Yeah, a lot of people have not heard this quote by C.S. Lewis. I even had to get some help trying to find where this was originally, because this was in a talk that I gave years ago. But a lot of people don't realize that Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe started out with images that C.S. Lewis had in his head back when he was 16 years old. Like when he was 16 years old, he had this picture in his head of a fawn carrying an umbrella. And so, I mean, this is, we see the kind of the evolution of C.S. Lewis. And as of course, anyone who is watched or read the Narnia series, you can tell that it very much is an allegory, especially the very first one, Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, of Christ, of Aslan as the Christ character. And so what Lewis was saying is that he didn't even plan on having that stuff in. That pushed its way in of its own accord. And I love the way he said that, because I find that truth does that a lot of times. I think if someone is really committed to being a good storyteller, they're going to have these elements of truth that make their way in, whether you want them to or not. And this is one of those things that I think Christian artists have been really criticized for in the past, and rightfully so, that they kind of begin by saying, what is it that I want to preach at the audience? And I think we're almost seeing a shift nowadays, where some of the more Christian things like The Chosen and stuff like that is becoming more story-oriented, more built around the characters, versus in the past that had been more what Hollywood was doing. And Hollywood is actually switching over to being, how can we be more preachy? How can we talk about feminism? How can we talk about the patriarchy? How can we talk about basically all the elements that are within the Barbie movie? But the way that Hollywood has done them in the past has been so preachy that it almost ruins the story. And so one of the things that I noticed after seeing the Barbie movie, the first time I went to see it, I posted it on Facebook and I was saying, okay, guys, I'm going to take one for the team here, because I was supposed to speak on a podcast for Frank Turk about this at a training that we were doing. So I went and saw the movie and thought that I was just going to hate the whole thing, and I ended up loving it. I just thought this was one of the funniest things that I've ever seen. And the more I talked about it, the more I realized that I was picking up on all these aspects in the movie that other people weren't picking up on, especially just the aspect of some of the gender roles within play, some of the concepts of like, what is our ultimate meaning? What is our ultimate purpose? There are all these things that I was picking up on that I was like, wow, she really nailed this, that I found that a lot of other Christian writers and conservatives were not picking up on. And I was like, why am I picking up on this? And I think it really is because it is good storytelling. And even if someone is not wanting to explain kind of universal truths or just universal themes, those things are going to make it its way in there, because that's what resonates with people. That's what resonates with audiences. And truth, we know where truth comes from. No matter where you find it, truth is going to be from God. And so I just saw a lot of these aspects, and I discuss them in the review that I give, that I think kind of peeked their way in of their own accord. I don't think it's something that Greta Gerwig did on purpose, or anybody in Hollywood would have purposely put in there, but they made their way in anyway. And I just love that C.S. Lewis quote, because it kind of discusses how that happens.
Well, before we talk about the meat of the movie, I definitely want to address kind of the Christian community and writers and reviewers and podcasters, YouTubers, because basically anybody in the Christian community or even in the political conservative circles have really come out against this film. And the reason why I want to ask you about this first is because inevitably, every time we cover a television series or we cover a different film that's come out, something to that nature, people immediately get on our YouTube video of it and just say, you know, you're capitulating to Hollywood. We never need to, you know, bother with such fare at all for the Christian. And every time I ask our reviewers, okay, why do we have Christian apologetics? So we have a lot of resources on that on our website. We don't need to talk about it here, but I definitely want to get to why you had a different take than some of the Christian, you know, reviewers did on this, because that's the first thing people are going to want to know. And I want them to tune in for this entire podcast, because this might be something different. We want to give you some food for thought that you might not have heard in other places. So why would you say the whole Christian like reviewing community gave this a big thumbs down? This is indoctrination. In no way should you see this film. I mean, what about this film really gave them this visceral reaction that it was propaganda and terrible? And you know, how did that differ than maybe obviously the rest of the world to the tune of $1.5 billion has really resonated with the film?
Yeah, I mean, they do address a lot of themes that you would expect coming from the left. They address a lot of things within feminism. The word patriarchy, I think someone said, is used actually 8 times in the film. And it's like they have these themes, but I think as Christians, we have been trained almost to react more than what we have to sift through. And this is one of the things that we really try to do over at Mama Bear Apologetics is we have an acronym called ROAR. It stands for Recognize the Message, Offer Discernment, Argue for a Healthier Approach, and then reinforce these ideas through discussion, discipleship, and prayer. And one of the most important things I think in discernment is if you've noticed a lot of discernment ministries or people say, oh, I'm discerning here. All they want to do is point out the bad. All they want to do is point out the things that they disagree with, as if everything is like great, except for the things that are bad. And I need to pluck those out and I need to emphasize them and show them for everybody, that they miss the opportunity to say, what do we agree on? Because there's passages in scripture that says, you know, that you need to exercise your discernment by showing what is good and excellent and praiseworthy. And so I think a lot of times that we miss out on where are we actually agreeing. And so I think just after writing the Mama Bear books and after analyzing things so many times using that ROAR method, even though I'm picking up on things that I disagree with, I'm always looking for things that I agree with first. And sometimes I get really surprised with how much that I do agree with something. There were so many different layers in the Barbie movie. It's like, even though they addressed feminism, they did it in a way that I think if we had shown this movie to feminists maybe 20 or 30 years ago, I don't think the feminists would have thought it was feminist. I think it almost portrays things that feminists would normally reject, like the concept of wearing all this pink, like the concept of wearing all these girly dresses and kind of some of the way the characters act in there. That's not the way you would traditionally think of feminism, yet that's how it's portrayed in here or within the concept of patriarchy. Even though they were trying to make a point that the real world has patriarchy going on in it, the movie at the same time was showing how, no, it's actually not. Like when the Ken character tries to go, he's like, can I just do a surgery? What about just a little surgery? I just want to remove, you know, just one little appendectomy. And there's a female doctor going, no, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. And he's like, but I'm a man. She's like, still can't do that. He's like, can I talk to a doctor? She goes, I am a doctor. And so it's like he's trying to do all the things that supposedly a patriarchal society would allow him to do. And he's kind of getting shut down at every single turn. And so it almost has the opposite message, like, A, yeah, do we have patriarchy going on? Well, it depends on how you define that. But is it making it to where any man can walk in and do things easier? No, Ken's getting shut down left and right. So it's almost a criticism of the idea that our real world is ruled by patriarchy. And I'm not sure how people are missing this, which this is the exact opposite message that you think they would be trying to say, that if they were full-blown feminists, they'd be trying to say, hey, the real world is dominated by men. But yet, when we look at it in here, it's not dominated by men. Which one is it? So anyways, I think that's one of the things that we have to see within the Christian conservative and the commentators is they just kind of hear these buzzwords and immediately think, oh, this is bad. This is indoctrination. And they really don't dig that much deeper. I couldn't even make it through. I think it was like Matt Walsh's rant where he's like literally burning a Barbie doll at one point. It was kind of disturbing. But I don't know. I think we miss out on a lot when we don't know how to look for the good, the excellent, and the praiseworthy. Or just find things that we can collectively laugh at because they're funny. We don't want to lose our sense of humors. We don't want to stop being able to laugh at things because we've made everything political. And I think that was a knee-jerk reaction by a lot of people because they were expecting that from the Barbie movie. And because they were expecting that from the Barbie movie, that's all they saw.
We are grateful that you are a faithful listener to the Postmodern Realities podcast. And we need you to get the word out about this podcast. Let people know about it. I talk to people all the time who don't realize that we have this podcast. And so really, literally, tell a friend. That's what I do. I tell friends about this podcast so that they can be equipped with all the very fascinating content from our Christian Research Journal authors, cultural apologetics, Christian ethics, theology, and Christian living. So we would love it if you would share your favorite episodes or the latest episode on your social media accounts or email a friend or just, as I said, simply tell a friend. And of course, now the journal is available to everyone without a subscription
free online at equip.org when you click the article section and the journal section. New content every week, which is so fantastic that people can read all of these great articles without a subscription. But we still do need your support. So if you would like to give us a tip, we'd be super grateful. And you can easily do that by going to equip.org, clicking journal, clicking Postmodern Realities Podcast, and you will find a link to tip us at any one of the episodes. So with that, now we're going back to our conversation about the Barbie movie with Hilary Ferrer.
Well, I think one thing when I went to go see it, and I didn't really feel like seeing it, I thought, oh, I don't think this is going to be my kind of movie. But I walked out of there thinking, I think most people should see this because it has got so many things that are springboard to Christian apologetics. There are so many themes in this movie that warrant further discussion, and you could get into all kinds of topics with people who are completely not religious. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the content actually in the film. So just to kind of give an overview of the biggest overview of the film is that everything starts in the film, by the way, of course, as I noted, I'll note again, we're having massive spoilers in this conversation. So in the film, it opens up and you're in Barbie land and it's everything is wonderful and Barbie's having a dance party at her house and she wakes up and puts on a different outfit and all this kind of stuff. And then she comes, has this like existential crisis all of a sudden that just shocks her. She has a thought of death. So that kind of gives you some background. And then she goes into adventures in the real world. But I thought she made a very interesting point in your review. You talked about how miserable the characters in the Barbie movie became when they were no longer operating in the way in which they were designed. And I just mentioned that everything was fine. And all of a sudden, she doesn't know where it comes from, but she thinks of death. And all of this, you know, suddenly everything goes very poorly for her. She was going along and she was making all the same choices that she makes every day to have her fun, happy Barbie life, but she was miserable. Do you think this was something that Greta Gerwig wanted to, well, and her husband who also co-wrote it, is it something that they wanted to intentionally made a point about how some of these characters were miserable, especially I would say some of the lesser known, it was kind of funny. It was like a satire, you know, some of the lesser known dolls in the line that weren't ever very successful, like Alan and things like that, and Skipper and things like that, you know, the different, you know, we remember those. Well, not everybody remembers those dolls, but for some of us that were around and had them, there were these other non-Barbie dolls as part of the Barbie line.
Well, so first off, it wasn't really the essence of when things start going wrong that she's miserable. So the thing I was pointing out in the review was how when you go against your design, you start going miserable. Because what you see is you see pretty much everybody's very happy in Barbie land. All the Barbies are, of course, happy in whatever job they're doing. And all the Kens seem, you know, they seem a little bit, what's the word? They're like a little bit discontent, but for the most part, they're pretty happy too. They're going to the parties, they're doing everything. When we start seeing like that little thing where she says, does anybody ever think about death? It's almost like that instance of death almost mirrors the Garden of Eden, where you have just even this thought of death. Death enters in and all of a sudden things start kind of not going the way they should be, but it starts out slow. Exactly how we see happen basically in world history is things start out perfect and then slowly begin unraveling. Now, the concept that I was talking about in the review would be in terms of design, because if we look at the design, like kind of one of the jokes in the movie is that, you know, Barbie always has a great day, but Ken only has a good day if Barbie looks at him. And so by the end of the movie, what's happening is Barbie's trying to convince Ken, basically, you need to get a life. You can't keep looking at me to define you. You can't keep looking at me to fulfill you. But if we're going to look at how were the Barbie characters created, the actual Barbie itself, she was created to be the strong, independent woman. Ken literally was created as an accessory to Barbie. And so anytime you see Ken in the movie trying to get away from being an accessory to Barbie and kind of do his own thing, you see him getting more and more angsty. And they're trying to say in the movie, well, you can get away from that, just go be your own person. But I think this actually points back to this idea of when we behave the way we were designed, that is ultimately what fulfills us. And even in this doll world, this doll can't get around what he was created to be. Now, we're not saying that men were created to be women's accessories. That's clearly not what scripture teaches, nor does scripture teach that women were intended to be men's accessories. So it's like we're not saying anything for the real world. But when it comes to an actual creator, who I'm trying to remember what the name of the actual creator from Mattel is that created Barbie and created Ken, that whole purpose was for Barbie and Ken to be together. But Barbie was still created with a little bit more independence, but Ken really doesn't know who he is apart from being with Barbie. And when he does go into, you know, their little journey to the real world and he thinks, oh, this is great, men are in charge, he goes back to Barbie land and he starts doing all these things that his character was never created for. All these Barbie houses were not created for Ken. All these kind of silly clothes weren't really created for Ken. He starts trying to be independent of Barbie and he's miserable because that's not who he was created to be in the doll world. So again, that's bringing it back over to a lot of times we as humans think that we can flourish and that we can be fulfilled outside of what God's design for us is. But I think the truth is that we cannot flourish in that which we were not created for. And a lot of human history is this experiment to see if we can flourish and be happy and content and fulfilled apart from what we were created for. And they even go into, at the very end of the movie, this song, this beautiful song by Billie Eilish with the words, "What was I made for?" And this is another one of those truths that sneak into the movie where the little montage that they have, this "What was I made for?" and she's seen all these images. It is all about relationship and family and children and marriage. And again, you and I were talking before the podcast, we're not saying you have to have marriage and you have to have children in order to, you know, fulfill your calling, because, you know, sometimes the Lord has a different path for you. Like John and I, the Lord has not allowed us to have children, but yet he has a purpose and a function for which we were created that I do think that I am fulfilling just in doing Mama Bear apologetics. So anyway, it's just this concept that I use the word telos in the article about having what we were created for. When we try to get away from what we were created for, we're miserable. We're not fulfilled. And I think the movie kind of showed that in its own weird way, but I don't think many people picked up on that.
I think you were talking about Ruth Handler. She's actually the creator of the Barbie doll, and she is a character in the film, and she's portrayed by the actress Rhea Perlman, and she's actually, that character is actually narrating the montage section that you mentioned where the Barbie theme written by Billie Eilish and her brother is playing. You mentioned that in the review that the Barbie movie seems to kind of maybe subconsciously affirm the idea that there's a place that should be spaces, you know, for males at sometimes and female only spaces. And of course, there was also some controversy. I want to ask you about that, what you thought about that. And then there was some controversy around the fact that one of the Barbies that they show, they tried to show a real wide variety of Barbies, not just racially, but like in body types. And one of the Barbies was a biological male, so kind of like a trans Barbie. And I wanted to know what you thought about that. But I do want to mention, in case people were wondering, that Mattel actually did make a trans Barbie back in 2022, last year. People may or may not know about
the
black.
I thought that was coming out. I didn't know that.
They already did that. The black actress, Laverne Cox, it's for her. They've done some series of like actual real people, and she was the first trans Barbie that they ever made. And it was part of their tribute collection to different real life people. And so it was, Laverne Cox is well known for wearing, you know, major gowns and that kind of things to award shows. And so that's kind of what the Barbie doll looks like. So they had already made one, although I don't know if people realized that they had made it because maybe it was marketed as part of their tribute collection to real life.
Yeah, I was going to say, it wasn't really a Barbie. It's more like they made Laverne Cox and Laverne Cox Haxpins to be more transgender. So I wouldn't say they came out with transgender
right
Barbie.
I mean, they would say that that was their first trans Barbie, like in the line. But so they had, before the film came out, they already had a doll that represented that. But anyway, this, it's very obvious that one of the Barbies is a biological male. So what are your thoughts on that casting decision? And then also let's talk about just seeing the need for having just spaces where there are only women and spaces that there are guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the whole idea of having a trans Barbie in there, first off, I don't think it's super duper in your face. There's a, there could be a lot of kids who have not been introduced to the concept of trans that don't even realize that that is a biological male. But I will say just from the publishing world, just because I have a lot of publishing contacts and people that I'm friends with across the spectrum of different types of publishing, and what they have told me is it used to be, it's like basically any book that's coming out nowadays, specifically fiction, you have to have an LGBTQ plus character that you include. And they, that I've even heard them say it, you know, they were exempting some of the really established authors, but even the really established authors are not being able to publish unless they have LGBTQ plus representation. So when I saw that, to me, it just seemed like another one of those rules that culture is making, like you can't even get this film made unless you have something like a trans person that is represented there. So, I mean, it's a good place for, if you're seeing this with kids, to kind of bring up this concept, but it's one of those things that you need to be expecting that anything that's published or anything that comes out in movies that's going to be current, you need to expect that they're going to have these characters in there. And so we can either fight it or we can just expect, okay, this is the rules that people are being required to play by right now. So that's just kind of, it is what it is. Is it right? Is it wrong? I don't know, but it's the way it is right now. And then you were asking also about just this concept of all male spaces and all female spaces. That one of the things that I noticed about Barbie Land is it was clearly intended to be mostly a female space. And again, one of the things that the creators did intend to do with this movie was Barbie Land is not supposed to just represent some creator's vision of what Barbie Land would be like. It is supposed to represent the way little girls are playing with these dolls. And so what you're seeing in Barbie Land is kind of a merger between what was originally created in terms of the dolls and in terms of the accessories and the clothes and the house and whatever. But it's also an interaction between how girls are playing. And for the most part, I would say Barbie has been exclusively girl doll, just because you don't see a lot of guys playing with dolls. I never even saw guys playing with Ken dolls when I was young. So all of the things that you see about Ken is like the psychology of a little girl playing with a Ken. All the things that you see in what the Barbies are doing, it's not necessarily what a grown woman would do. It is what a little girl pictures a grown woman doing. How would a little girl picture what it's like to be president? How would a little girl picture what it's like to be, you know, a mail worker or sanitation worker? You know, they've got these, you know, Barbie construction workers that are all wearing pink. It really is supposed to show the child's psychology. Now, one of the things I thought was hilarious is when Ken came back and he introduced the patriarchy, saying like, hey, we don't have to just be accessories. We can be the men in charge. Well, all of a sudden, it interacts with the real world. So he changes Barbie's dream house into the Ken Mojo Dojo Casa House, which itself is just this ridiculous name, but it's hilarious. But they had this really quick shot of the real world of this warehouse worker going, man, these Ken Mojo Dojo Casa houses are flying off the shelves here. So it's showing that interaction with the real world. But what I don't think people think about is who is buying a Ken's Mojo Dojo Casa house. It's not the little girls. The little girls are not buying Ken's Mojo Dojo Casa house. You suddenly have little boys now that are playing, because there is actually a place for them within the Barbie and the Mattel world. Right after that, you see these Kens going into these massive battles where they're fighting each other, and you know they've turned all the lacrosse sticks into swords, and they're, you know, giving each other noogies on the head, and just basically the way you would see boys play all of a sudden is being shown within the Barbie world. Now, at that point, it's like it kind of shows Barbie world went a little bit barbarian, and that's what happens basically when you have boys enter into the sphere. All of a sudden, things that used to be the nice teacup and tea parties and pink dresses. I mean, anybody who had brothers or, you know, something like that that tried to play with their Barbies knows that the Barbie's head's eventually going to come off. The boy's going to do some kind of something destructive to it. that Barbie Land was originally created for the Barbies. It was created for the girls. And even though there were guys, you know, the Kens that are in there, they aren't even representing men. They're representing the way little girls think of men. And so there is something beautiful about the way Barbie Land works at that point that is it's just, you know, let girls play the way they want to play. Now, I think the opposite we've seen we see this more in the real world, where I've heard men talk about that there's nowhere else that they can go where they can be just guys. Like, girls can go to things and say, oh, this is girls only. But if guys try to do something and say, this is guys only, suddenly that turns into, oh, that's so sexist. And how dare you not allow us into these spaces. But I think there really is something for guys just being able to be around a bunch of guys, because when you get guys and girls together, they do behave differently. The school that I taught at my first year was an alternative school for disciplinary issues, and they actually separated the girls from the boys in the classrooms because they said they will act differently. The boys will try to show off for the girls, or the girls will just not pay attention as much, or the girls will try to, you know, dress differently for the boys. That when you put boys and girls together, they act differently. And so there is this place for guys to be guys, to, you know, to grunt and spit and snort and fart and do whatever they need to do and laugh about it and just be guys. And we don't have to go in and feminize and civilize all that. Now, we don't want the whole world to be like that, but there is a place for that. And likewise, I think there's a place for all girl spaces where they can kind of be whoever they want to be. One of the beautiful things about the Barbie movie is, since we're portraying a little girl's perception of what a woman is she has no clue about anything sexual. And there's something really beautiful about that. Like, when she's going down the in Venice Beach, and she's got this horrible spandex, you know, thong type leotard on, and she can't figure out why the men are looking at her or why other people are looking at her. Or the scene where Ken says, you know, oh, well, now that we're boyfriend and girlfriend, I think I should spend the night. And she goes, why? And he goes, I have no idea. Like, there's something so beautiful about that neither of them have any idea why he's supposed to spend the night. They just know that's what boyfriends and girlfriends do, unfortunately. And that's showing how we don't want children necessarily to know about all this sex. This is portraying a little girl's view of what a boyfriend and girlfriend do. They don't know. They just kind of hang out. And so anyway, so that's kind of getting off the point. But just, having these men's space, these boy spaces, these girl spaces, I think there's something beautiful for that we don't necessarily always need to mix them there. Let the guys have their little utopia. Let the girls have their little utopia. When you try to sometimes mix those two utopias, just because you have what the girls want and what the boys want are different, it's a lot harder to make that mix. I mean, that's why the real world is the real world, is we've been called by God within our differences to kind of make this work. That's why marriage is so beautiful, but also so confusing, of like, how in the world was this ever supposed to work with us being so different? Male and female together, that there's a complementarity to that you don't see when it's just an all-male space and all-female space. But I think there's still a place to have those.
One of the things that the Barbie movie addresses is, what does it mean to be a woman? What is a woman? And you describe in your review the opening scenes of the Barbie movie, which is done so cleverly, I thought, hearkening back to images from other very famous films. But it conveys a message of these little girls, and it shows little girls playing with dolls, and they suddenly are throwing those dolls and they're casting off. It seems to portray or imply a casting off of maybe, quote unquote, the oppression of domestic life and maybe motherhood. But then as the movie progresses, you realize that those things are actually not being denigrated. And the end montage that we've already referenced, where it shows all these women and their children and kind of in a hazy montage, and it actually with the words that are being spoken by Rhea Perlman, playing the Barbie creator, and she says something to the effect of, as mothers, we stand still so that when our daughters look back, they can see how far they've come. And I actually, in the theater, was sitting next to, because they asked me to take their picture before the movie, all dressed in pink, a mom, her daughters, and her mom. And the grandma was sitting next to me. And when those words were spoken and there was that hazy montage and the Billie Eilish song playing, which is slow and thoughtful in the background, she just totally burst out in like heaving sobs actually next to me. I mean, she was very affected by it. So what are your thoughts about this? Because honestly, it's kind of a satire at the very beginning. And I just laughed out loud at some of the lines that were being said as part of the narration of that. And then one of the main things that people have loved about this movie is the monologue from a character that's played by America Ferrera, who's a married mom, and she and her daughter are part of this story. And that's towards the end of the movie. So even some of the things that are in that monologue seem to conflict with this idea of oppression of domestic life, because in the monologue, she says, you know what, society, if you suddenly want to talk about your kids, you're put down for that. And so I'm just wondering what your whole take was on that.
Okay, that was a lot of different scenes of the movie. So we'll start out with the beginning. I did think the beginning was a little bit dark. So it starts out showing children, or showing little girls specifically playing with dolls, and it has them kind of in these period pieces, you know, something from Little House on the Prairie, but then like, you know, dye them all in gray, and there is something to be said for children's play is intended to prepare them for the real world. And you even see this in the animal kingdom, that the way animals play is intended to help them basically build the muscles and learn how to do what they're supposed to do as an adult. Like little cats, you know, little kittens like to attack things, and dogs like to chase things, because like a kitten, when it becomes an adult, it has to hunt in order to be an adult cat. So same thing with play. A lot of times you see the things that little girls were play with, especially back in the day, and they were like these little mini bake muffin things and these little miniature kitchens, and the boys had little miniature, you know, hammers and all these different things. So there is something to be said for play itself preparing you for the realities of the adult world. So in the beginning, it shows the little girls playing with these dolls, which the assumption is the role of an adult woman is to take care of babies. And for all of basically human society, this has been kind of a woman's role and a woman's job, because we did not have ways of preventing pregnancy besides just not getting married and not having sex. So this was a reality that all women, unless you had problems with infertility, were going to have to deal with. But you bring in, I think it was like somewhere around the 60s, because they start playing the movie from 2001, A Space Odyssey, where, you know, the monkeys are bashing stuff. It's a very iconic sound and a bit of a giant monolith.
Yeah, the whole scene is an homage to the beginning of Kubrick's film.
The whole beginning. And so all of a sudden, and this is where it got dark, and I was like, oh, I'm not so sure about this. This is where I wasn't sure how I was going to react to the Barbie movie. All the little girls start bashing their baby dolls, but it's not the fact that they're just bashing these baby dolls. It's this look of rage on their faces as they're bashing the baby dolls, that seemed almost like, that does kind of seem like the advent of the kind of second wave feminism of, these babies are the things that are holding us back. We need to have abortion in order to be the same. And so I kind of picked up on a lot of that darkness. And now they could play with a doll who was an adult female doll, but had no babies. You didn't have to even introduce child rearing into the picture. So it kind of starts out with that, showing, you know, them rejecting this role of motherhood, really. And so I thought, oh my gosh, is that what this movie is going to be about, is just how to reject motherhood? But then, like we were talking about, at the very end of the movie, we have that montage where we have Billie Eilish singing What Was I Made For? And it starts out with pictures of women with babies, and then women with toddlers, and then women with daughters that are going to dances and going through graduation, and women that are going through, you know, getting married. And it seems like all the things that you would expect for them to be denigrating by the end of this movie were the things that they were uplifting. So that almost felt like a very different message from the very beginning. the comment made by Rhea Perlman about how motherhood is about standing still so your daughters can see how far they've come. I can understand where she's coming from that. And I can totally understand where the grandmother of that little trio that you saw sitting there burst into tears, because there really was a way that women had kind of this wall that you could get this far and no further. And not only were you created and designed to have the role of wife and mother, but all of a sudden within society, it's you're not allowed to do anything else. And that right there, I think, is a very damaging message that I think should have been, you know, I that's one of the things in our Mama Bear book that we talk about. Thank you, feminism, for getting rid of that, this idea that this is the only thing that we can do, because we really are more than just bodies and more than just breeding machines. We have brains, we have hearts, we have minds, we have skills, all these different things. So seeing a grandmother who's crying at that is probably because she realizes how limited she was, and then all the things that she sacrificed for her daughter, and then her daughter sacrificed for her granddaughter, and she really can see how far they've come. So I'd say that references kind of reality there. I don't think it has to be necessarily that. I think that kind of it, that has its own kind of denigration of motherhood, of the idea that you're only standing still and only focusing on your kids, when there's a lot of women who do a really great job as moms, but they also have other jobs too. And not saying, not going into this, you know, you have to have everything, but you have to leave room for being able to do other things, to be able to grow as a person. Because if you're never growing as a mom and all you're doing is stopping and staying still, I don't think that's really a healthy form of just personhood in general. But then going back to the America Ferrera rant, where she just talks about all these contradictory expectations of women. And this is something I've talked to John about before, this idea that in a lot of movies that I grew up with, you'll have guys making comments of like, ooh, I like a girl with a healthy appetite. And I'm like, that's so bogus. He doesn't like a girl with a healthy appetite. He likes a girl with a high metabolism. Because if you really want a girl with a healthy appetite, there's plenty of girls out there with healthy appetites, but those aren't the ones he's asking out. He wants the really thin girl with a healthy appetite. So that might be an example of one of the contradictions that America Ferrera says. You need to be pretty, but not so pretty that you threaten other girls. Or you need to be thin, but you can't say you're trying to be thin. You say you're trying to be healthy, but at the same time, you have to be thin. You can't neglect your kids, or people think you're just a career woman. But if you talk about your kids, then you need to stop talking about your kids. And she just talks about all these contradictory messages that women have. I think one of the ones was you have to be attractive, but not so attractive that other men look at you. You need to be attractive for your husband, but not so much that other men look at you. And I've even had conversations with John about like what women are wearing, that it's like, it is a shame that like if a woman gets married, well, all of a sudden she'll never be, you know, feel like she can never be the most, you know, attractive woman in the room, because he says, oh, you can only wear XYZ. But then he's looking over at another woman who's showing a lot of skin. And so, yeah, there's all these contradictions with being a woman. But at the same time, that whole speech, while I understood what she was saying and I resonated with a lot of the things that she was saying, it's one of those things that I think we can recognize as being true, but we can also get past that, because all of those things that she's mentioning is contradictory. Like you have to, you know, when you lead, you have to do it to where you're not squashing people's dreams and you're hearing what everybody has to say, but then you're also supposed to be a leader. It seems like the whole speech was predicated on what other people think of you and how other people perceive you. And I would say just without God in general, if you're constantly focusing on what makes people like you or what makes people see you the way you want to be seen, that's just a never-ending struggle. You are never going to stop living in a world of contradictions if you are constantly chasing public opinion. And so I think that that's maybe one of those problems I've had when I was younger, because I was constantly chasing public opinion. But somehow the older we get, the less we really have to care about a lot of those things, and to where there's so much freedom in Christ where I'm just doing what I've been called to do. Now, if someone else doesn't like that or they don't think I'm doing it the right way, that's fine. That's on them. But I know if I'm following God the way he's called me to do and I'm doing the tasks that he's put before me, I don't have to worry about all these other contradictory opinions. And I don't think there's as much freedom in that outside of Christ, because there is no set meaning or purpose outside of Christ. There's no one that you can look to versus within the Christian worldview. We don't have to play this game that other people are playing, because we're not making our own meaning. We're not trying to create our own persona. We are creating, we are being, we are discovering who God created us to be. And there's something just beautiful and very freeing in that. So again, like I said, I think her speech about the contradictoriness of being woman has a lot of good points, but at the same time, we can get past all those things if we really just put our identity in Christ instead.
Yeah, you just mentioned the idea of making our own meaning. And in your article, in your review, you actually quote a line that Barbie says in the film to Ruth. And Barbie says, "I want to be a part of the people who make the meaning, not the thing that is made." And you know, this idea of making meaning seems really big to Gen Z kids, this younger generation. How do you think they resonated with that, and why are they really big on making their own meaning?
Yeah. Well, I think this is one of those things where we need to look at the difference between meaning and truth, because I think sometimes people get those confused of that meaning and truth are the same thing. Because with postmodernism, we wanted to kind of deconstruct everything and say the meaning of things, you can create it for yourself. And so that's been the experiment since then, is like, what is the meaning that we're going to create for ourselves? But then again, like I said, it's kind of gotten confused with truth, that once you start confusing meaning and truth, are there things that are true that can't change, that I can't rewrite? Absolutely. Is meaning something that I can sometimes change and sometimes rewrite? Well, it depends. What kind of meaning are we talking about? Are we talking about what it means to be a male or a female? Or are we meaning what it means to be employed? Like, you can be employed as a mother, or you can be employed as an astronaut, you know? I would say that the Gen Zs and even some of the millennials were really brought up with, you do anything you want, be anyone that you want, to the point of where they have to deny how they were created, which I don't think is healthy. But just her concept of where Barbie is going back to her creator to ask her basically for permission to maybe do something, and saying, I want to be one of the meaning creators. I think it was almost more of a way of saying, I want to be the one in charge determining what I was created for. Because there's a lot of things you can do that weren't necessarily what you were created for. We can't change what we were created for. We can change what we do. And so I think she was really wanting to say, we go into telos a lot in the argument, she wants to be able to decide on her own telos. And this is essentially what we did in the Garden of Eden. And this is basically what humans do in general, is we want to tell a holy God, I want to decide the purpose for which I was created. I want to decide what it means to be human. I want to decide what it means to be good, what it means to be loving, what it means to be, you know, all these different things, instead of allowing God to define that and then having freedom within those constraints. Because that really is the beauty of truth, is there's these absolute things and then there's a lot of freedom, but within constraints. This is what all design does. If you remember the movie Apollo 13, where they needed to make something happen, and they went and they dumped out a whole bunch of pieces on the table and they said, this is what we have to work with. Anyone who's a designer knows you will always have design constraints. There's a lot of freedom within design, but there are certain things that you cannot get outside these certain parameters. And so when she was saying, I want to be the meaning maker, I think in a lot of ways, that's like us saying, we want to change the parameters, not necessarily we want the freedom to work within the parameters that God has given us. And again, that would be the difference between meaning and truth that I think people get confused. But so yeah, anyway, that's kind of how I analyze that scene in the movie.
Well, the Barbie movie, as I mentioned, is still in theaters. It's now on streaming platforms. Right now, it's charging $25 to rent it. So eventually in a few months, it'll go down to a much more affordable price. But now it's just more available to people. And I'm sure there are some kids that haven't seen it, middle schoolers, even teenagers. So I would like to ask you to give some advice to parents who haven't seen the film and they're just wondering, because they have seen Christian reviews about it. And should kids see this film, or what age would it be appropriate to see this film with kids that can discuss it with their parents?
Mm-hmm. So I think that's always going to be kind of a question for individual parents and for individual kids, because there are so much, and I think God did this as a grace to us, there is so much that kids don't pick up on. And so if we think that if we're going to show our kids a movie, they're immediately going to get indoctrinated, they're going to pick up on all these jokes, and then they're going to have questions. Even as a teenager watching movies like Spaceballs and the Three Amigos, there's stuff as an adult that all of a sudden, like I watched Three Amigos with a friend of mine the other day and I went, oh, all of a sudden I got some of these innuendos that I hadn't picked up on even as a teen. So first off, if you think your kids are going to see this and they're going to immediately turn into little Marxist feminists, whatever, you know, it just doesn't work like that. There's a lot of stuff that kids just don't pick up on. Number two, I would say that different kids are different. And you need to, as the parent, my general recommendation is for the parents to see this first to see what are the things that my kid is probably going to be asking about. Because you're going to know your child best. You're going to know maybe the things that they'll pick up on. You're going to know the things that maybe they struggle with or the things that you've kind of heard them hinting around, you know, this ideology or that ideology. You want to have a game plan for what to discuss with them. And I think this is one of those movies that really has a lot of different things to discuss, and specifically discuss using the Rohr technique, meaning that we're going to look at what is the main message and then what is the good that we can affirm? And then what are some of the lies that have snuck in? And then how does the Bible actually address some of those truths in a better way? How does the Bible address some of the lies that we saw snuck in? This wasn't just, I mean, it was a feel-good movie. I thought it was hilarious. I actually saw it 3 times in the theater, but mostly because I kept having either, you know, another article or another podcast that I was going on that I needed to go back and pick up on stuff that I didn't pick up on the first time. But I'd still totally watch it again. So it is that feel-good movie, but there are so many springboards for fruitful conversations that you can have with your kids. But again, this would go back to, how prepared do you feel to have those conversations? And is your child able to really grasp what's going on? And, you know, don't force things on them if they don't really want to talk about patriarchy and they're not one of the ones that already feels beat down as a female or something, then don't force it on them. But it is a good place for you to, I don't know, I think it's a good place for you to be able to start those conversations. But again, if someone feels like their child's not ready for it, we just need to not judge each other and let parents make the right decision for their own kids.
Well, I think there are a lot of kids that have probably seen it. And so if you think that your child is someone who could see it and then you can discuss it with them, I think that could be a really good conversation to have with them about how the Christian worldview speaks to some of these things. Well, it's been fun talking about this movie. So on a much lighter note, it's fall and we're heading into the holiday season. So are you team pumpkin or team apple?
It's funny that you should say that. I don't like either of those. Now, when it comes to like scents, like maybe candles, I like those. But when it comes to stuff that I'm drinking, I'm not really. And I would just say, just since I have such an aversion to pumpkin, I'd probably just have to say apple by default.
And you don't even like apple pie at the holidays, Christmas and Thanksgiving?
I know. I just don't like hot fruit. I know that's a weird thing. I really like, I don't like freeze-dried fruit. Probably the most radical thing I can do with my fruit is in a smoothie. But other than that, I like fresh fruit.
Well, that's very interesting. Well, thank you for being a guest again, Hillary, on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to episode 364 of the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest was Hillary Frere of Mama Bear Apologetics, and we did a deep dive about the summer blockbuster film Barbie. Hillary has written an online film review about this movie, and you can read her article only at our website, equip.org. Stay connected with the Christian Research Institute and all the new content we have coming your way. The best way to do that is to head on over to our website, equip.org. There you will find thousands of free resources right at your fingertips, from articles to video to audio, and it's all for free. You'll find our podcasts hosted there, as well as the Bible Answer Man broadcast, which is hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and streams live every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. In addition, you don't want to miss out on subscribing to Hank Unplugged, which is the podcast of Hank Hanegraaff. And in that podcast, he has really in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people. And in addition, he has a new series on his podcast feed called Hank Unplugged Shorts, which Hank goes into the headlines in the mainstream media and refutes a lot of those cultural issues that we have in these short podcast episodes. And there's quite a few of them. You don't want to miss out on them. Now, if you want to find some of this
at other places where it's all in one place, really subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's a great way to get all of our content there, our podcasts there, and different individual questions theologically that people have that Hank answers at our YouTube channel. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, I don't know how to subscribe to YouTube. I don't have a YouTube account. Well, actually, you might just have a YouTube account. If you have a Gmail address, you have a YouTube account. Just log into YouTube with your Gmail address and search for Bible Answer Man channel, and please become one of our subscribers. In addition, if you see that bell icon right there on our front page, please click that, and every time that we have new content, you will receive a notification that new content is up on our channel for you to be able to consume. So thank you so much for the ways in which you partner with the Christian Research Institute. We are grateful for you listening and reading and watching.